just because we get around.
Talking about my generation.
Things they do look awful.
Talking about my generation.
I hope I die before I get old.
Matt, in New Brunswick, you're on WNYC. Hi, Matt. What makes your generation unique?
Hello, hello. I'm born in 1992. I'm a millennial. And I think that what makes the millennials unique is that via the internet and via the digital age, they are subject to more opinion and narrative to make sense of than the generations coming before them.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Kathy in Suffolk County, you're on WNYC. What makes your generation unique?
I think what makes our generation unique compared to the others is we are, unlike our parents or our grandparents, very close with our kids. We're friends. We vacation together. We spend time together, unlike our parents or the parents before them, in my opinion.
Wait a minute, Kathy. Stay there, because Joe in Bayshore, you're on WNYC. What makes your generation unique?
Yeah, hi. What I would say, I was born in 1960, and what I would say is that our generation has been impractical, and that maybe is a fine way to put it. And I base that on, I think we're the first generation to spoil our kids with 100 gifts at Christmas time, to give everybody who participates in the sport a trophy, to start high school at 7 o'clock in the morning, and I have a few other things on that list.
Kathy, maybe that's why your kids and you and Joe are of the same generation, want to spend time with you, because you spoiled them.
But I don't believe so. I don't think my kids are spoiled. They're very ambitious. They all have great jobs. But we do spend an awful lot of time together.
You're going to give them a trophy at Christmas just for showing up?
No, not so much.
Thank you, Kathy and Joe. Thank you. Ben in Brooklyn, what makes your generation unique?
Hey, how you doing, Brian?
Hey.
I was born in 1979, so I'm 35. I really feel like the people born right around my year, 78, 79, 80, 77, we were the last people to make it through high school without rampant use of the internet and computers. So I had to borrow encyclopedias. I used the typewriter. I love the internet. It's awesome. But I just like being the last ones that made it through high school without it.
Defined by the absence of technology. And Aminata in Brooklyn, our favorite 16-year-old. What makes your generation unique, Aminata?
Hi, Brian.
Hi.
I feel like I was born in 1990 and I'm 16 years old. So I feel like my generation is very accepting of who people are, whether you're straight or bi or whether your religion, your skin color. I feel like we're very accepting of people. That's just my opinion. I mean, there's always an exception to the rule, but I feel like generally we all get along. We don't really care as long as you're a nice person.
Thank you very much. And, folks, you're listening to WNYC FM HD and AM New York, WNJT FM 88.1 Trenton, WNJY 89.3 Netcong, WNJP 88.5 Sussex, and WNJO 90.3 Toms River. It's New York and New Jersey Public Radio, and it's a Brian Lehrer Show family meeting today on all of today's generations. Now, did you know that according to years of extensive polling by the Pew Research Center, about half the baby boomers were married by the time they were 30, about a third of Gen Xers, and only about a quarter of millennials married between 18 and 32. 72% of the baby boomers are white, 61% of Xers, only 57% of millennials. Only 16% of boomers are religiously affiliated, 16, 21% in Gen X, but 29% of millennials, according to Pew. But religious in this generation doesn't necessarily mean conservative. Asked if you would rather have a bigger government with more services, 32% of boomers say yes, 43% in Generation X, and 53% of millennials. A majority of young people today tell the Pew researchers that they want a bigger government. And with those data points as a few starting points, we continue our family meeting on the generations. Who knows all this Pew data really well and can talk about what it really means? Paul Taylor, senior fellow at the Pew Research Center, who remains with us for this segment. And he is the author of the book, The Next America, Boomers, Millennials, and the Looming Generational Showdown. Paul, hey.
Good to be with you. A lot of numbers, and boy, I thought that group of callers were totally spot on. Again, I got a lot of data on attitudes, experiences, lifestyles of the different generations and the things that your callers touched on, whether it's technology use, whether it's more inclusiveness and tolerance among the young, whether it's more adults of many generations living together under the same roof. It's all there in the data, and people are living it, and they know it, and they feel it.
And let's keep this call in going on the question, which is your question, one of your open-ended survey questions, and we'll compare to the actual results nationwide in a few minutes. The question simply is, what makes your generation unique? 212-433-WNYC. Just identify your age or your generation and tell us the first thing that comes to your mind. What makes your generation unique? And again, it's not a yes or no question. It's not a multiple choice question, and there is no right answer. Just call in and answer the question for yourself and how you perceive your generation. What makes your generation unique? 212-433-WNYC. We will make sure we get a variety of generations represented on the phones at 212-433-9692. So while the calls are coming in, Paul Taylor from Pew, this 2012 finding of yours that millennials want big government more than boomers or Xers do. Do you get at what kind of big government they want? Is this about Obamacare? Is this about preserving Social Security for their old age? Do they want a really big military to kick the world's butt? What's it about?
A little bit less of the latter, but I think the first two, that question, we didn't focus on specific things that government does. It's a broader question just to get your inclination. Is government a good thing? You know, you go back to the Reagan era, government was not part of the solution. Government was part of the problem. So it's that kind of question. And millennials, now in their 20s and early 30s, we can see it in their voting behaviors. We know how they voted for the last two or three presidential elections, and we see it in answers to questions like this. They are the most liberal and most big D Democratic generation we have seen in the 40 or so years that we and other groups have been taking such temperature and slicing and dicing it by age group. So they are very, very distinctive. I think it is related to who they are racially and ethnically. They are our transitional generation to an America that's on path to become majority non-white. As you said earlier, about 43% of millennials are non-white. Minorities in this country, certainly in the modern era, through our, you know, have tended to look towards government as a source of protection, as a source of support. So that all sort of makes sense. But I guess the last thing I would say, which we point out, is that despite their attitudes, despite their voting behaviors, they are also distinctive in that more so than any other generation, they don't identify with either the Democratic or Republican Party. Mm. A record 50% of millennials, when you ask the classic question, what are you, Republican, Democratic, Independent, 50% of millennials will say, I'm independent. And I think this goes to another interesting strand of millennials. They don't identify with the kind of what somebody my age would say are the anchor institutions of society. They are not religiously affiliated. They're not politically affiliated. And as you pointed out a moment ago, there's another 5,000-year-old institution that they're not partaking of, at least not yet, and that is called marriage. So they're making their way. I think a lot of their social intercourse, the most important things they do in their lives, they do through social media. They create their own networks there, and that becomes the way they intersect with the world rather than through some of the traditional institutions that older adults would say is sort of, you know, are sort of the more typical milestones into adulthood.
Did I read the religion chart wrong? Are millennials less or more religiously affiliated?
They are. You did have that one wrong. They are less religiously affiliated. And again, about 3 in 10 millennials. Again, classic question we've been asking for decades. What are you? Protestant, Catholic, Muslim, Hindu, Jewish, etc. And a record number of millennials say, I'm nothing in particular. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean they're less religious across a whole range of things, measures that we have. They are a little bit less religious, but what they really are is they just don't want to identify with organized religion. They have their own networks. Somebody more clever than me described millennials as our first modern pre-Copernican generations because the universe really can revolve around them because they can go online and into social media and they can find existing networks that interest them. And then using technology, which is now a two-way technology, they can put themselves in the middle of those networks and tweet out and have thousands of friends, and they're at the middle of it, and it's very empowering. It's an unusually optimistic generation, given what a tough time so many young adults in their 20s and now early 30s are having getting started. You know, they've come of age at a time when the economy really cratered and has been a long, slow walk back from that from them.
So, listeners, what makes your generation unique? Let's see if we can go a little chronologically through time here on our phones. Sylvia in Chelsea, you're on WNYC. Hi, Sylvia.
Hi, you talking to me?
I am.
Oh, good. Yes.
Are you talking to me? Well, you can tell me when you were born or what generation you feel a part of and what makes that generation unique.
Well, I was born in 1930, and because I was born in England, you can't really get beyond the uniqueness of being in the middle of World War II and being evacuated and how it's never been followed up. So one doesn't really know, except from my private practice, and I'm all about post-traumatic stress disorder, how many people were hurt through that evacuation.
Can I ask you,
and finding their parents had been bombed out, or who they stayed with, how many, mm-hmm. what kind of people.
So here's a generational question for you, given your expertise. How come we never heard much about World War II veterans suffering from PTSD and after Vietnam it exploded?
That's a great question. I think it's something people wanted to avoid because it's been recognized, but not under that name, and certainly in World War One and before that. But I think everybody was very comfortable with the way they treated people. I'm talking about mental health treatment. And it was very hard for them to understand that this is a disorder that manifests in the body, not in the mind. And they seem to have been reluctant. Also, they're used to their own methods of giving therapy and other kinds of treatment. And it seems as if they didn't want to hear it. But there is a very wonderful organization that's been all over the world, and people all over the world come to their conferences once a year. So they know, but they're naturally interested in their own mm-hmm. research, and it hasn't right. really gotten out to the public. But it will, I hope.
Thank you, Sylvia. Ted in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Ted.
Yes. I haven't been on your program for a long time, but let me just tell you what. I'm born in 35. That, of course, makes me silent generation. And it seems to me one of Dr. Taylor made a remark that some of these things that occurred with the boomers, you know, with the 60s, came out of the 50s, and I think that's quite true. I came from a rather authoritarian family and was basically crushed in all kinds of ways. And what that gave me is what I think was a sort of a offended sense of justice, which in a sense I acted out of in the rest of my life, which made me, of course, identify with the politics of the boomers. I became active in anti-war politics. I was almost the only radical of my generation that any of these kids knew.
And was it something about your family or also your generation?
I think it was partly generation, because I think the generation in its conformity had made a bargain. And if the bargain was not kept, then the fury of the was manifest. In other words, we came out, as was pointed out, we came out of this in which this world was supposed to be just. We looked around and we saw injustice, many of us.
Right.
The race problem was right on the horizon. The question of war was right on the horizon.
Yes, and if you were going to conform, it's a fascinating and smart point. If you were going to conform, what you were conforming to had to make sense. Jonathan and Dobbs Ferry, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jonathan.
Hi. I'm thinking as a baby boomer, I was born in 1949, that there was this terrible rift between our generation and our parents' generation. And I think it came from the fact that we were the first post-scarcity generation. We didn't really worry about having enough to eat or having clothing, and our aesthetics and politics were so different from our parents.
Yeah, so thank you. And let me turn to Paul Taylor from Pew on that one. The first post-scarcity generation, obviously after the Depression and then the imposed scarcity of World War II with all the rationing and everything to help the war effort, and it drew a wedge. It threw a wedge between Jonathan's baby boom generation and his parents.
Well, yeah, I think that's a really important point. I quote in my book a sociologist who's about the same age as Jonathan, Alan Wolfe, who gets out of he gets his PhD, I think, in the late 60s. At that point, there had been something like 115 consecutive months of economic growth. And Alan Wolfe says, I didn't have to go look for a job when I got out of college. The job came looking for me. That notion that the economy was always going to get bigger and better, I think, gave boomers the freedom not to have to worry about that, so they could worry about the war or about civil rights or about women's rights or about other kinds of cultural changes. And they did have a complaint with their parents on that front. And I think, I think the economic freedom and certainty gave them the full throttle voice to express those. The one other distinction I would draw is there was a whiff of generation, more than a whiff of generation war in the air in the 60s. And the boomers sort of had a middle finger of protest pointed at their parents and grandparents on cultural grounds. You guys screwed everything up. We're here to make it all better. What I find so interesting is today, as millennials come of age, in many ways they have been given a much more difficult set of economic circumstances, but they don't resent their parents or grandparents for it, as some callers earlier have noted.
Right.
These generations get along famously well. My sense is that 20-somethings have migrated rather seamlessly from being the children of their parents to being the roommates of their parents, and they have great respect for them. They know they've gotten a lousy hand economically, but they're not in a complaining mode. I think they're in a put one foot in front of another and try to figure it out mode.
And related to that, what about this trend line that you have in your data of baby boomers being more conservative than Xers, who are in turn more conservative than millennials? Doesn't that go against the stereotype of the liberal boomers, the anti-Vietnam, pro-civil rights, feminist, environmentalist, countercultural flower children who had the big generation gap with their parents we've just been talking about, and they're more conservative than the Xers who rebelled against them to some degree and didn't buy all of the lefty stuff, or today's millennials?
Well, here's an interesting political factoid. We remember, I was a boomer, and boomers are remembered, as you described them, long-haired hippie protesters. But even at the time, that did not capture the full generation. And the one way to tell that story is the presidential election of 1972. We're in the midst of the Vietnam War. And it's the first year that the voting age is lowered to 18. It's the first year baby boomers can vote. And more baby boomers that year voted for Richard Nixon, who was prosecuting that war, than for his anti-war challenger, George McGovern. And if you now fast forward 30, 40 years later, when we just ask the question of people of all ages, what would you say in the course of your lifetime? Have you gotten more liberal, more conservative, or stayed about the same? Boomers stand out for a majority saying I've gotten more conservative. About a third say they've gotten more liberal. I think that as folks, boomers are now in their 50s and 60s, and silents are in their 70s and 80s, and I think when they look at the change that's happened in their lifetime, I think it's probably fair to posit a lot of them are somewhat disoriented by it, disoriented by the speed of technological change, cultural change, racial change, and I think it has bred a kind of conservatism that you see in their voting patterns and in their attitudes.
Paul Taylor from Pew and author of the book The Next America, Boomers, Millennials, and the Looming Generational Showdown. It's our family meeting on today's generations here on The Brian Lehrer Show. And let's go through a number of callers really fast, and we're going to get your quick take, folks, as we continue to go through the years based on when you were born to get your answer to the question, what makes your generation unique? So Danny in Bell Harbor, born in 51, what makes your generation unique?
The music. Simple as that.
Thank you very much. Mike in Queens, born in 54, what makes your generation unique?
The last one, I hope, that was subject to a mandatory draft.
Thank you. Monica in Manhattan, born in 63. What makes your generation unique?
I think the big distinction with my generation is I think that I'm the last generation that I'm aware of where everyone's parents in high school were still married.
Thank you.
And it's made a big difference, I think.
Joseph in Norwalk, what was your year?
77, so you just skipped like 14 years.
But yeah, whatever. By accident. Okay.
There was a point in time when you lost your friends when you went out, and that was it. And then all of a sudden, pagers came out, and everybody was using beepers and pagers. So I think we're the last generation, besides doctors, for some reason, who still use them. I think we're the last generation to use pagers as a Gen X.
So, Joseph, thank you. So let's dial it back a little bit and go to Binyam, born in 72. Hi, Binyam. What makes your generation unique?
It's epidemic in the 80s, Brian.
Say it again?
The AIDS epidemic.
The AIDS epidemic in the 1980s.
Yep.
Absolutely. Andrew in New Rochelle, born in 87. What makes your generation unique?
I think that I think of my parents' generation as having this faith in the government because they grew up in a kind of social democratic state. And I think having grown up in the 80s and 90s and 2000s and experiencing more of a economic government that was put into place by Reagan and all the people that kind of followed up with that, we've seen how that has contributed to inequality and injustice, and I think that that's largely contributed to our growing discontent as a generation with the economic establishment and has kind of contributed to the differences in opinion between our generation and our parents' generation.
Andrew, thank you very much. So, Paul Taylor from Pew, you've been hearing all these answers of different people of different generations. We're going to go through some of the answers that you got when you did this in sort of a scientific way at Pew. First, what made you ask the question in the way that you did? You know, usually you see survey questions and they're multiple choice or the yes or no questions. You actually gave people an opportunity to answer an open-ended question. What makes your generation unique? What were you looking for?
Well, we didn't want to. You're absolutely right. When you do surveys, you generally tend to give pre-wired categories of responses. But sometimes you do it open-ended because you don't. Just from listening to your listeners, people take it on in all sorts of different ways, from the music to the AIDS epidemic to technology and all the rest. And we thought this one would be better to just let people talk, and then you have to kind of code the answers. Two very quick summaries of what we got, and we asked this question 3 or 4 years ago. First of all, we started with, do you consider yourself part of a generation? You have some sort of generational identity, and Xers had less of that than both the boomers above them and the millennials below. I think the numbers are about 6 in 10 boomers and millennials said, yes, I am part of a distinctive generation. Only about 5 in 10 Xers said that. Then, well, if you agree you're part of a distinctive generation, what is it that makes your generation unique? Millennials stand out for technology use as their most common answer. Xers also say technology use, but at way lower levels. Indeed, Xers are the generation that can't decide. They're all over the map as to what makes them unique. So I do think that in the course of their lives, for reasons we talked about a little bit earlier, there is just less of a sense of generational identity among Xers than there is among some of these other generations. The last point I'd make, going back to some of your older callers, is the silent generation is the only generation that when we ask what makes your generation unique, points to historic milestones, and they point to World War II and the Depression. That has clearly shaped them in a way that we don't see in the responses of any other generation about a specific historical event.
The silent generation, those born between the Brokaw Greatest Generation and the boomers. And as I look at these numbers, one thing that jumps out at me is just how much technology defines us today. Because since this was an open-ended question, you're not going to get a 50% response rate on any one answer or 75% or anything like that. But when we look at how small they are compared to the millennials' number one answer, the millennials' number one answer, as you said, was what makes their generation unique? It's technology use. And 24% So a full quarter of the respondents said technology use. When you go to the baby boomers, the biggest response was just 17%, which was work ethic. And by the way, I thought, work ethic? Really?
Yeah, I had the same reaction.
That was the biggest thing that the boomers said identified them. And the second biggest boomer thing was respectful. Really?
Yeah.
The boomers, again, really? Work ethic and respectful are maybe not the first two things that come to people's mind for the baby boom generation. But my larger point is, you didn't get a number one category any larger than 17%. Gen X, they also said technology use, but only 12%. So the millennials are just more identified with technology use than any other generation is with their top trait.
Absolutely. And you know, I mean, we all see it and we know it. We see it in the way they use social media, how integral. I mean, they are the history's first generation of digital.
What happened? Did we lose Paul? Did we lose Paul Taylor? I think we lost Paul Taylor for a minute. We'll get him back. And I guess while we're getting him back, we can take more of your calls on what made your generation unique. Let's see. Who's our oldest caller on the board? I think it's George in Norwalk. George, you're on WNYC. Hi, George.
Yes, hi. Hi.
When were you born?
Pardon?
When were you born?
1927.
And what do you think makes your generation unique?
The day after Lindbergh landed.
You know that milestone. And what do you want to say about your generation?
We're disappearing.
Yeah.
Rapidly.
Sadly.
Every month or so I hear an old buddy is gone and another funeral.
And what's disappearing with them? Any particular traits or characteristics or politics?
It's getting lonely.
Yeah. I hear you, George.
And we're also the non-tech generation. I have trouble with the computer and the cell phone. My daughter has to help me continuously.
George, hang in there. Thank you. All right, let's go to another Generation X caller, since that's part of the hook for this, part of our 25 Years and 25 Days series. The hook is 1994, the year Kurt Cobain committed suicide, a seminal moment for Generation X. And Simone in Pierrepont, one of the first Xers, born in 64. Hi, Simone.
Hi, how are you?
How do you define your generation?
I think we have patience, more patience. Patience is one of the seven heavenly virtues. And I think compared to what's happening today, I have a 16-year-old son, is that we understand that things sometimes take time, meaning people don't get back to you because they have to think about it or they have to sleep over it, or somebody has to work on something. So today, I think we just always give people, you know, the time, and because we know that even though you can contact people very quickly, it doesn't mean that they're ready for an answer back. And I think compared to what young people today don't have that. Everything has to be fast. People have to get back to you within an hour.
Are you saying you're just the last patient generation? Or how about compared to older people than you, the boomers?
Yeah, and older. I think not
and
just
older.
Our generation.
Right.
And older,
okay.
Yes.
Simone, thank you very much. And we have Paul Taylor from Pew back now, I think. Paul, you there?
Yes, here I am.
I want to ask you a political question. Since you identify this trend line as millennials more liberal than the Xers, but the Xers more liberal than the boomers, so gradually more liberal over these generations. Politically, I thought that when the Xers first emerged, when we were talking about Xers and two Xers, when they were first coming out as Xers on the show 20 years ago, that they were less politically liberal than the boomers, that they were ideologically independent in general. And I think we heard it from some of our Xer guests earlier in the show regarding how they identify themselves. They didn't buy the left worldview in a neat package about big government or about America being a bad actor in foreign affairs or all the way on social issues. But they also thought the right wing was selfish and racist and religiously intolerant. So, for example, South Park. I think of those guys, Trey Parker and Matt Stone. They're both Xers, born in 69 and 71. And they famously dish to both liberal and conservative shibboleths in the way that I mean on South Park. For example, this clip.
What's wrong with you?
I don't want to shoot the bunny.
What the hell are you talking about? You don't want to shoot the bunny. You're babbling. You're not making any sense. You're hysterical.
I'm not hysterical. I just don't want to shoot the bunny.
No nephew of mine is going to be a tree hugger.
Yeah, hippie. Go back to Woodstock if you can't shoot anything.
So a hunting scene from South Park, and they were giving it to the hippies and the tree huggers, but they were also giving it to the hunters who couldn't understand the hippies and the tree huggers. Yeah. And to me, that ideological independence represented something about Gen X that I don't see in your survey results.
No, I think it's there, and I think you have it exactly right. I mean, there's a tendency to think that all young generations start out liberal and then life happens and they come conservative. A famous Winston Churchill quote, if you're not a liberal at age 20, you have no heart. If you're not a conservative at age 40, you have no head. But you have the history right. Xers didn't start out as a liberal generation. Another cultural touched on what family ties, Michael J. Fox, and the conceit there was he's the button-down conservative son of liberal hippie parents. That, you know, he's the Xer who's the son of the boomers. There is a lot of that there. I think through their lives, Xers have been, you know, their message, coming of age message from Reagan was the government is the problem, not the solution. I think they have been conservative on their economic values. Where they show up as more liberal is on their cultural values. I think the norms of tolerance, inclusiveness, acceptance of different lifestyles, you see a lot from the millennials. You also see it from the Xers. So it's a it is not that straight line that maybe some of the responses show. They're a very interesting generation. And I guess the thing I would say about the millennials is we know they are starting out very liberal and very big D democratic, but my sense of them and all of their behaviors, they don't like to identify themselves with big institutions. And I think they are grazers, in perhaps the best sense of the word. Their technology usage tells them, don't get too attached to any way of doing business because there's going to be a cool new app next week. And I think you can apply some of that to their political choices as well.
And I
like
think
Americans
that,
of all ages, they care about performance.
And I think that started with the Gen Xer. So here, for example, is a clip from the TV show My So-Called Life. And this is a 1994 clip where the lead actress, Claire Danes, is asking what it means to build an identity.
It just seems like you agreed to have a certain personality or something. For no reason. Just to make things easier for everyone. But when you think about it, I mean, how do you know if it's even you?
The very Gen X, My So-Called Life. And Paul Taylor from Pew, who did so much of this really interesting survey research over many years, over many generations of subjects. Thank you very much. His book is called The Next America, Boomers, Millennials, and the Looming Generational Showdown. Paul, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
And we'll continue next with one thing that defined Generation X, the economic boom and the technology boom, call it a bubble if you prefer, of the late 1990s. It's our family meeting on Today's Generations. Stay with us.